This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill, the app of all apps, the super app that combines mobility, delivery, and now financial services with a touch of a button. An ambition that Grab has in 400 cities that it operates in. But today we speak to Sean Goh, the country head of Grab Malaysia, which is actually probably the most valuable startup in the region. Now, thank you for coming on The Breakfast Grill again, Sean. A lot of things have happened in the last 18 months. Just to give some background, Grab is going, of course, for a listing on NASDAQ via a SPAC by year end. But I want to focus on operations here. And let's start with one of the pillars, which is delivery or P-hailing. I mean, it has really been an essential service. But I think there are also accusations that Grab has become an almost monopoly-like company and unfairly treating all stakeholders, be it the drivers, customers, and even the businesses. So is there some truth to this? Because otherwise, why would there be a Malaysia Competition Commission or MyCC inquiry now?
And I see you've jumped straight into a very controversial topic around, are we, I guess, doing good for the community that we serve? And is that growth coming at the expense of stakeholders? So maybe I'll start with a couple of views on this. And the reason why this topic is controversial is because some people believe that platforms have reaped huge profits. In some ways, sort of like a rent-seeking or toll collection kind of business. But in reality, platforms lose money, right? And I want to get into a little bit of that, like why do platforms lose money and why is it that we believe we are actually on the right path in terms of trying to serve the community? So, you know, three quick things. The first is, if you think about the cost, deliveries are expensive. And this is one of the issues in the industry where F&B operators feel that the cost is high. But the bulk does go to riders. The delivery partners and riders get two times of what you and I pay in delivery fees. And the reason we do that is simple. We believe delivery partners work hard and they make sacrifices and they take risk every single day. And we need to give them a respectable income that is fair for the effort. The second is businesses. So the food service industry bears a huge amount of rents and overheads. And this has always been the case. But in good times, incremental sales that come from deliveries helps them get additional profits. At lower margins, but it helps them get additional profits to take home at the end of the day. But when dine-ins dissipated, there's a brewing expectation, I think, in the industry that both platforms and consumers will fork out more to cover those rents. But like I mentioned, first of all, platforms are loss-making. They're not actually trying to capture these profits in this time of need. It is possible for platforms to try and capture more, but I think that would be very short-termist. Secondly, consumers are also affected financially. And then to ask consumers to fork out more to cover the rents that are no longer covered by dine-ins, it's also not altogether fair. I have a third point around the digital marketing industry, but it's a little bit technical, so maybe in a bit.
Okay, but you know, your point about platforms losing money, maybe that's the case now, but eventually there will be a tipping point, right, where you've achieved a certain size, a certain scale, and you've got the market share that you want. So it's not going to be the case forever. But if we talk about it today, and in terms from the F&B owner's perspective, because we have seen screenshots of them posting on social media that they make very little money after certain deductions because they participated in promotions. So some say the 30% commission is too high, but yet they have no choice. Now, is Grab being unfair or is it just not being upfront about the promotion that they offer and the charges that go with it?
Yeah, I have seen this screenshot that you referred to. Let me explain our model, and that screenshot obviously isn't from Grab. So in the digital marketing world, a success-based model is rare in the industry. And there's a reason for that. So most digital marketing platforms have a limited amount of visibility. Those who are more technical in the field, they call it impressions, right? Mm. So typically, the industry sells these impressions to merchants or brands who will then try their best to convert it into sales.
But Sean, are you guilty of this though? You say the screenshot is not of your company, Grab. But do you operate a similar scheme or similar promotions?
No, we do not. So I'll tell you two reasons why that incident in the screenshot will never apply to any of our merchants. Number one, we don't have hidden charges in the platform. Everything that we charge is fully loaded into our success-based fee. And that's why it might seem high sometimes, but that covers everything from logistics to the risk of orders that are placed and not picked up to the marketing service. Number two, the reason why our merchants would never end up taking less than they've actually sold is because we are operating fully on a success basis. So when we do run campaigns, for example, and merchants opt in to our marketing campaigns, they are purely paying us on success. Whereas I think in the example that you are probably referring to, it was a situation where the merchant there paid for a whole bunch of exposure and campaigns, but didn't see results. That would never have happened on GrabFood.
But I also hear complaints from business owners that when you look at the Grab app and you try and find their restaurant, they're listed way, 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 way below. They ask, you know, why is that the case? How is it an algo that decides where they rank when you switch on the app?
That's right. So I think any business owner would like to see their store listed higher up. And we do tailor this based on the consumer. So we look at a couple of factors. One is the distance to the consumer. And the second one is the affinity or the relevance to the consumer in terms of the cuisines that they're after. And we do also look at whether it, at times when consumers tend to order certain cuisines, we try to introduce new cuisines to them as well. So we're trying to optimize for multiple things here.
So it's not just based on the commission that you get. So let's say F&B outlet A pays you more commission, they would have a better visibility on the app?
No, that's not how we do it. So we don't optimize consumers' experience for the margins that we get. Our belief is that the margins should naturally flow from the fact that we create a better experience for consumers.
Now, clearly Grab is one of the winners, I would say, a Grab delivery during this COVID-19 period. How much has your top line grown in the last year?
Yeah, our top line for the deliveries business has grown tremendously because of the change in consumer behaviors. At the same time, our ride-hailing business, which used to be our biggest business, had actually dropped as much as 90% at one point, and is still struggling to come back up today. All in all, there has been some growth year on year.
For the overall Grab Malaysia group?
That's right.
Can you give us some guidance? Is it like low double digit, high double digit? And are you on the path to profitability, which is the most important thing?
So we don't share exact growth numbers, but we do have a set of results that we put out that talk about the regional growth. So you'll get a sense there. Mm. For path to profitability, I think this is important. I mentioned earlier that we are currently not yet profitable. However, I think it is our goal as well as our responsibility to achieve profitability at some point.
Which is when?
Yeah, we are looking at 100,000, over 100,000 livelihoods depending on us being sustainable. And we don't have a clear target yet for profitability because we are trying to also account for the current circumstances. For example, if we wanted to, we could try and ramp up profitability now given higher adoption of the delivery service, but we chose not to do that.
The Ministry of Transport, I think they're discussing also a P-hailing policy and is contemplating an independent regulatory body for the industry. Clearly, listening to all the complaints, has Grab had any engagement on this front with the government?
We have engaged the government on the potential P-hailing regulations. But I think that there are a series of engagements that will allow us to go deeper. We are only scratching the surface. Mm. Our biggest ask from any potential regulations is that it not only maximizes quality, but also minimizes friction, because we are looking at livelihoods that depend on the industry. If you look at 2019, the e-hailing industry, the e-hailing regulations have actually resulted in a 30% drop in the number of income opportunities in the industry. So we're looking to avoid that.
And of course, you know, the other thing to look at is the drivers, which are considered independent contractors, right? So I think you probably have no shortage of applicants at this moment, with so many losing their jobs during this downturn or just looking for some side income. But some would say that the current model is very advantageous and profitable but for Grab, but yet leaves these workers very vulnerable. So very limited social protection, no EPF, limited healthcare. And in places like the UK and Spain, they're changing labour laws. Isn't it time for a change in Malaysia also, especially since Grab Malaysia has probably achieved some form of scale and critical mass?
Another controversial topic. So when you look at the topic of social protection, I think, first of all, it's important to make sure that there is some level of protection. What we're doing about that is we make sure that we have insurance policies that cut across our entire community. So all our drivers, all our passengers, all our delivery partners are covered by insurance protection. Beyond that, though, to provide a further safety net, we are working with the government. So Perkeso and EPF have been close partners for some time to try and create awareness around this.
But you are not contributing to the insurance scheme.
Yeah, we don't pocket the amount that could have gone towards social protection, right? So the approach that we've taken is we'll pay the full amount that we would have contributed to the drivers and delivery partners. And we hope that they would actually take that amount and contribute it themselves. Now, as to the question whether we should have just paid that amount straight to the government and made it mandatory, that's a little bit beyond us. But we are not pocketing the amount that should have gone to it. We have just paid it to the drivers and delivery partners.
Has Grab actually tried to register all your drivers for vaccinations as a block? Because that's another important part about their health and safety.
That's right. So the ultimate goal is to get all our drivers and delivery partners vaccinated. And we have been in conversations with the Ministry of Transport to try and accelerate this as much as we
can. Yeah, why is it taking so long? So is it because Grab is not pushing hard enough when it comes to discussions with the government? And are you tracking how many drivers have been vaccinated, persuading them to do so and maybe giving them time off to do it?
We are pushing for our drivers to get vaccinated. They have just not been prioritized yet. And what we've heard so far is that it's a combination of a lack of supply as well as capacity.
Even until today, where, you know, you can walk into 10 centres in the Klang Valley to get a jab, there's still a lack of supply. I find that hard to believe that there cannot be better communication with the Ministry of Transport and maybe the Ministry of Health to get your drivers all signed up, especially since they clearly are an essential service and have worked non-stop since the first stage of the lockdown in March last year.
We have gotten them signed up, but they have not all been processed yet.
So where is the delay? Is it at the government side?
I wouldn't put it on the government because, you know, as you know, not all Malaysians are vaccinated yet. To be honest, we have been in dialogues, and what we've been told is that it's so far it's been a supply constraint.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Most of us would have seen with our very own eyes how reckless some e-hailing drivers can be. I want to be fair, it's not just the guys in green, but the guys in pink, orange, red, black, you know, carrying different bags. But I want to know, what is Grab doing to encourage a culture of safer driving?
And we have been putting up training modules to encourage a safety mindset. But I think that's not good enough. And sometimes training only takes you so far. There has to be monitoring as well. So we also started some time back crowdsourcing observations around drivers who are, for example, beating traffic lights so that we can take action. And we don't mean to be harsh, but I think this is an important enough area that we have to make sure that drivers and delivery partners understand that when it comes to safety, there are consequences to not adhering to the laws.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning is Sean Goh, the country head of Grab Malaysia. When we come back, is financial services the next step in achieving super app status? BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill. And the hot seat this morning is Sean Goh, country head of Grab Malaysia. Just a moment ago, we were talking about the P-hailing industry and is the business model fair to all stakeholders? Now, I want to move to financial services and digital banking because Grab submitted an application with Singtel for a license here in Malaysia. Only 5 will be awarded next year, but 29 bids were made. Tough competition, Sean. How do you rate your chances?
Well, I think competition is really tough. There are a lot of very competent players out there who are looking to enter the space. So I'm not sure, but we are putting in our best foot forward. And I think our proposition is unique in the sense that we are looking to serve both our consumers as well as our driver community with accessible, seamless financial services that are tailored to their needs, which is different, I guess, from other players.
But you already offer a myriad of financial services on your app. I mean, there's, of course, GrabPay, for example, which I do believe Maybank has a 30% stake. But, of course, the e-wallet industry or space is so competitive and you're probably, what, number 2 in the industry? So I'm just curious, how will all this be integrated eventually in assuming you win a digital bank license?
Right. When we look at the financial services space, it is much broader than just payments and it's much broader than any one segment. Ultimately, what we see on our app is that our users will have one place to access as quickly and as intuitively as possible as many services as they need. So we are looking at going beyond just any one service. We're going beyond just doing payments. We want to serve their needs from financing to insurance to payments as well as the rest of our services today.
So where are you going to make the money? How are you going to monetize this? Is it from the float that people keep with you currently and, you know, in the future, maybe even more? Or is it from fee income from the selling of perhaps, you know, which you already do now currently, insurance services maybe that will include unit trust later on? Where's the monetization?
Great question. So fintech and financial services is especially difficult because monetization on any one service tends to be challenging and long-term, right? So we're looking at doing this in 2 ways. First of all, to layer on more services to the same consumers that we already got onto the platform so that we reduce the cost to actually acquire new consumers. And the second thing is, if you look at each one of those component services, we're ultimately looking at building services that are affordable for consumers. And affordable generally means low margin, right? So we're not going to try and make the lion's share of our margins from like one star service. The goal is to really try and just serve consumers in 5-10 different ways and just make a little bit on each one. And because we're not making as much on each one, hopefully they become stickier on the platform and they're more willing to try more services. And that's how we stack up the overall economics.
So you're going for market share?
I wouldn't say market share because we have very established financial services players that, you know, are very credible. We're looking at the number of products that our consumers use. Mm. We're looking at how long they stay, even if it's for a very small service. And ultimately what that stacks up to is in the industry, what we call lifetime value. So we're looking at a very long-term game here.
But like you say, it's competitive, right? And for me, I think the newest competitors are actually the incumbent banks. And they're starting to get into the act. For example, even like Maybank with their MAE product. You know, and they have customer profiles. They have deep pockets. And yes, the argument used to be that they weren't so nimble, but I think that's recently less of a case. So what's the differentiation? Is it the technology you have or you know, the wealth of data that you have on your customers and the profiles?
Yeah, so I would say that the incumbent financial services players are nimble and they are very credible. I would definitely, you know, I think there's a misconception in the industry that the existing industry is not strong. That's absolutely not the case. What we're actually trying to do is to come from a different angle. And there are so many examples, but one classic example is if you think about a user who doesn't want a checking facility and they don't want a branch service, they can actually onboard onto our platform at pretty much zero cost to us. And that what that allows us to do is to offer more value back. So for example, if they put an FD with us, we would offer slightly higher interest rates because we're essentially passing on the cost savings back to them. And this is a different customer segment to what the banks serve today.
Yeah, and related to this is, you know, back in November, Grab was actually awarded one of the 8 licenses for digital lending by the Ministry of Housing and Local Government. Now, from the form F4 that was submitted to the SEC in the US for listing, I had a look, and for Malaysia, the target market is micro SMEs and B40s. I'm just wondering, has this initiative been rolled out here already?
Yeah, so actually we are in the process of building up that lending business. Our license is currently undergoing a conversion into a digital lending license. And that's important because you mentioned the segments we're going after are micro SMEs and B40s, which tend to be much smaller ticket sizes in terms of financing. Mm. And this is why, again, it tends not to be well served by the existing industry. And again, not because the existing industry is not competent or solid. It's because this is an overlooked segment. When you serve a small ticket financing or anything small ticket, it tends to be much more difficult to make it work in terms of the cost of credit processing, the cost of the branches. And I think being digital uniquely allows us to serve small transactions, small financings, without actually incurring too much cost.
Yeah, but are you on the flip side worried about default rates though? How are you going to ensure that your non-performing loans, let's call it that, will not balloon?
Absolutely. So defaults actually compound and exacerbate the problem of small ticket sizes. So that's what makes it doubly difficult to serve. And ultimately, we're trying to address this using a combination of data, as well as, I don't have a great term for it, but it's sort of augmentation of their ability to pay.
How do you do this forecasting?
Yeah, so there are so many examples. Maybe I'll give one. If we have a micro SME that is selling, so let's say it's a grocer or a sundry shop that's selling on GrabMart today, that gives us a unique insight into their ability to generate cash flows. I think that's one. But I think we won't stop at assessing their ability to pay. We also want to benefit the merchant by helping them increase their ability to pay. So we would, for example, help the merchant sell more on GrabMart by doing training, by giving them more tools and access to more campaigns. So I think we're trying to do our part, not just to assess them, which is very one-sided. We're also trying to help our borrowers be able to pay more comfortably.
This gives me a glimmer into how much data is going to be amassed and how data is also going to be used by Grab, which then leads to the next question. In this world where we know everything can be leaked, everything can be hacked, what steps are being put in place at Grab to prevent any such data breaches? Because in Singapore, you've had, 4 cases? So what is being done, especially since the goal is to be this super app eventually?
We take data privacy and cybersecurity very, very seriously. And if you look at past cases that have occurred, they have always been contained. Compared to a lot of cases in the industry where you have a dominoes effect, if something fails, there are no fallbacks. There are so many things we're doing in this area, but I think it starts with the people. We're doing a lot of training on all these areas, even though it's a little bit time consuming. Training for new joiners, weekly refreshers, annual refreshers.
How much money do you spend on it though? Because it's very hard to keep one step ahead of all these cyber criminals.
Yeah, I'm not sure that, someone else might have done it. I'm not sure that we've quantified how much cost there is, because when it comes to security, I think cost isn't really the concern.
One final question, Sean. You have said that Grab Malaysia is not profitable yet, but with an impending listing, is there pressure to do so because public equity shareholders aren't as patient as private equity investors? And when do you think you can achieve this critical milestone?
Yeah, I'll probably have to dodge the question again, because I hope we'll achieve profitability and I'm confident we will. But I would also like to maintain some flexibility to respond to market conditions. And if you think about the overall group and just answering the question around, like, would the IPO lead to more pressure around profitability? I think in some ways, there would be an expectation that we have a path there. But if you look at the types of investors that have come in, they've taken a very long-term view. Our main SPAC sponsor is tied in at least for 3 years, and they have intentions to stay much longer than that. So at the moment, I would actually say the focus is on growth, and then profitability will naturally follow.
On that note, thank you for your time today. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Sean Goh, country head of Grab Malaysia. I'm Wong Xiaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.